Yes, good afternoon, everyone. It is a great pleasure for me to be able to present our work to you today. I would like to point out as a first aspect that this seems a bit complicated, but it kind of reflects my chaotic status in the past years. Finally, I'm locating at the Institute for Quantum Computing in Waterloo, but also up to recently, I was at the Ekoki in Vienna, at the Institute for Quantum Optics, but also I spent a good time in the last few years in Brisbane and Andrew White's lab. The work I'm presenting today is like a mixture of all those institutions. Of course, we've heard a lot about photons and quantum information processing with photons. I'd just like to remind ourselves again, why do we do quantum information with photons? There are a couple of good advantages. They are easy to handle, they're easy to transmit, manipulate. They are really fast, so the very short coherence times, but long lifetimes, and all those things make them really convenient and easy to handle quantum systems. However, there are some harder parts, and actually we've already heard about quite a lot about that in the conference. So storage, keeping photons localized is hard, but there is a lot of efforts on quantum memories. And the other thing is getting single photons to interact with each other is also hard, so that makes it difficult to then use them directly in quantum computing. But I'll say a little bit or show a little bit about those schemes. So one of the main protocols, of course, for an application of quantum information is quantum key distribution, where two parties, Alice and Bob, want to share secrets or secure communication. And so essentially they establish a quantum key by sending photons across. Well, that's one of the best possibilities. And it can be either that they transmit single photons or entangled photons. With entangled photons, exploiting the quantum correlations and the quantum non-locality, and hence use the, in both cases, by observing their correlation measurements, essentially, they can detect if somebody has in between attempted to manipulate the photons, detect them, or do whatever attacks. So I don't think at this audience we need to say much more. So one thing which has always been a very big interest, also from my side, was how can we extend distances? There's already been a lot of discussion, and also like Nicola mentioned again in the morning, today's experiment in optical fibers, for instance, they can reach around the order of 200 kilometers. That's the kind of level we have. And if we restrict ourselves to a single transmission on ground, we might be finally reaching maybe 500 kilometers or something, but then we will face like a stop. It will get harder to go beyond on that. Of course, with quantum cryptography, we don't want to get stuck in the situation of the cans and the wire telephone, because it's a nice feature, but not too practical in the end. We want to go beyond. And clearly, quantum repeaters are one good solution in that direction, and also Wolfgang just showed us some very good advances in these directions. That is one approach, but there is another possible approach, that is to go to satellites and exploit the fact that if a satellite is placed in space, there'll be essentially empty space for the photons to transmit in that medium, or actually there is no medium, so we can have long distances, we can cover essentially global quantum cryptography networks by for instance, making the satellite a trusted node. So that is a very interesting and fascinating direction, and for instance, in Europe, we have been putting forward the so-called Space Quest program, which mainly aimed at as a first demonstrator of doing quantum communication in space, to put an entangled photon source onto the International Space Station and for instance send one of the entangled photons down or both entangled photons and do both quantum cryptography, proof of concept experiments, as well as quantum science tests, so testing entanglement over large distances. The current status of this project is that currently there is an activity to develop entangled photon source and a faint laser source, which is suitable for the space environment. This is in the ArcSys-5 framework. So it's all about making such an entangled photon source, which can, for instance, sustain the vibration. It can sustain the environment, like the thermal and radiation and vacuum environment. So that's looking very promising and moving ahead. So ESA has already identified quantum physics experiments, quantum optics, but more in a general term for their future science programs. And for instance, such tests of testing entanglement in space is already on the long term. They call it the cosmic vision of the European Space Agency. This is the current design model of such a unit. It's about 90 centimeters across and contains all the modules which would be necessary, like the quantum sources, but also other classical modules, data processing or lasers, thermal management. And then finally, there would be two telescopes, essentially periscopes, which can point in 2 pi of space, and then we can reach any part on ground. So what would a ground station look like? As an example, this is the optical ground station of ESA, which is conveniently located on Tenerife. So it's also quite a pleasant place to work. And we have been able to access this station and do a range of proof of concept experiments by using the 1 meter diameter telescope in that facility, which is essentially built for laser communication. That is also very convenient because below the telescope there is the focal room, so to say, where essentially it's an optical bench, an optical lab, which can be easily accessed, and there we can place our polarization analyzers and detector modules. So across from Tenerife there's the other island, La Palma. It's about 144 kilometers in distance, and we placed a transmitter there, which is a self-built small telescope assembly, just essentially a lens of that diameter. And we were able to show a range of proof of principle experiments. Most notably, we did entanglement-based QKD along that distance. But very recently, we were able to complete experiments, which I see as the most important proof of concept of doing the entangled source on the space station. What we did was essentially create an entangled photon pair on the source side and send both photons across the 144 kilometers. And essentially we do detect them in the same receiver, but there is a time delay and also there is a spatial separation at the beginning. So the photons for most of the part, they see separate paths or individual paths. And so this situation corresponds to having a symmetric situation with 2 times 144 kilometers and the source in the middle. And that's in terms of losses and that kind of situation, it is very similar to what we would expect from the going down from the space station, like depicted here, to two separate receivers. And we were able to, for instance, show that the quantum correlation is still present after that long transfer. So in terms of, there's another interesting feature, in terms of lifetime, the travel time of that distance is half a millisecond, and so essentially the entangled photons were both after creation, so from the point of creation to the point of detection, that lasted a half a millisecond, so that's I think the longest reported lifetime of entangled photons for both photons. So in the future, there is a lot of stuff ongoing. We have to work on forming teams of scientists and industry, further development of hardware, developing mission concepts. We have to look at if we want to, for instance, use it for a quantum cryptography network, one could embed it in those secure, trusted node networks like the Seiko QC, which was mentioned. And also one can consider what would a smaller mission look like, maybe a piggyback solution as a proof of principle. So now I would like to switch to a different topic, which is also very interesting, and which is about doing quantum computing with photons. As I tried to mention in the beginning, photons are easy to handle, and for instance, the single qubit operations, they're straightforward and can done with high quality. But getting two qubit gates with photons, that's the hard task. And for instance, what one would effectively need are strong Kerr nonlinearities. So it's easy to draw such a circuit that there is like two interferometers, and in between we would need this kind of Kerr nonlinearity which can do a two photon dependent phase. But this is very hard to achieve directly in a lab. So the question is, is photonic QAP a lost case? Not necessarily yet. There is what I like to call the first salvage of LOQC. The first salvage is LOQC, linear optics quantum computing. So interestingly, it was discovered that one can build linear optic circuits, so essentially based on interferometers and using ancillary photons coming in and then detect them again in order to effectively realize those nonlinearities, that Kerr nonlinearity which we need. And however, that's the famous paper by Neil LaFlamme and Milburn. However, it is very consuming on resources, on efficiencies, and so on, but it was fascinating to see that it is possible at all. Solvable. Scalable. Or scalable, maybe. Scalable, yeah.
Okay.
Scalable. Actually, that was like typing it and not looking anymore, I'm sorry. Yeah. That's interesting, so you actually read what is up there. So what I must point out at this point is that didn't want to go into the details. There have been a range of proof of concept experiments of those basic circuits, the nonlinear sign shift itself, or even the linear optic control set or C0 gate. There have been a lot of those experiments. One which I would like to point out, which was quite recent, actually done mainly in Andrew White's lab in Brisbane, that it was, for instance, discovered that one can make such circuits, like improve them by making shortcuts through higher dimensions. It's very interesting, for instance, if one needs to do a 3-qubit operation, if one breaks it down into 2-qubit gates and single-qubit operations, it would look like that, and effectively one would need 6 2-qubit operations. But for instance, by cleverly encoding the third one into a three-dimensional space and taking one of those dimensions like around the whole circuit and combining it afterwards, this can do exactly the same as the above circuit, and essentially one only needs 3 2-qubit operations. And it turned out that, which was cleverly discovered by a couple of theorists, that this can be realized in a rather simple optical circuit based on these displacing polarizers and with the ancillary photons coming in. So essentially, those two partial polarizing beam filters realized the first two linear optical C0s, and the last one is done by post selection essentially. So that's also a very interesting line of thought. But still, in linear optics, one can do maybe better, and that is to go to the one-way computing concept, to do cluster states, where the difficulty of doing those two qubit operations is then transferred into doing a sequence of measurements, single photon measurements onto the particles prepared in a very particular entangled state, which is a cluster state. Also there, with photons, there has been a range of experiments with four photon cluster states, and what has also recently, well, not so recent anymore, but done not so long ago in Vienna, was to actually do the deterministic version of the cluster computing, where the active feed forward is included, which is also needed, and here the measurements of the photons 1 and 2, for instance, are fed forward onto the still remaining photon 3 and also photon 4, and these measurements are adapted depending on what output is detected here. And then one can effectively do a deterministic one qubit operation, like preparing this final photon in a certain particular qubit state. But notably, the kind of speed for this operation from the detection to the feed forward is about 150 nanoseconds. So that's actually quite a fast quantum computer in some sense. And the main limitation is actually the electronics. So it's not the photons. So it's the detection and the feed forward electronics, the Pockel cells, which takes up all the time. So there is actually huge potential there for speeding up these kind of circuits. So what I would like to go towards now is like the consideration of, okay, we can do those experiments, those proof of principle experiments, but in terms of experimental performance or reaching the final goal of doing a real scalable quantum computer, We are still a far way, there's still a long way to go. For instance, if you take just a simple four-photon circuit, we are usually having a pump rate of creating those entangled photons at 80 megahertz, and finally we're observing photons maybe at the level of 1 hertz, 10 hertz. So, of course, there is a huge difference there, and we are losing a lot of signals on the way. So. What does it mean? How can we get closer towards that kind of goal? And of course, what we have to do is let's take a look at the main key experimental devices which are needed, the requisites. So we need to have sources, detectors, and circuits, so on. And okay, how good do those components, for instance, have to be in order to reach at least the next step of quantum computing, like doing heralded gates or simply creating heralded states, like a heralded entangled pair, meaning without post-selection. And how good do we have to be? So the approach we took was to go to a simulation, so representing every photon mode as a photon number in a Fock space, so it's a highly dimensional problem, and running through those kind of circuits, like this is the simplified KLM gate, which works in such a way we have a control and a target photon coming in, and then we have those ancillary detections, so two zeros have to be detected here, and there are two ancillary photons coming in, and there has to be a 1-1 detection here, and this gate will work if there is one photon here and another here, and only one each, then the output would be successful, and we would get this gate operation. So we would have the C-naught, for instance. So that's what we call a heralded gate. But okay, how good does if we want to realize such a circuit in the lab, how good do our sources need to be? We need four sources here and our detectors. So that, for instance, if we create an entangled pair, that it, for instance, would be able to violate a Bell inequality. Or One can also look at other scalable gates, as a Franzen gate or the Knill gate. Another thing to look at was, which we considered, okay, go one step beyond. We have two bell pairs, and we want to create a GHZ pair by a fusion, for instance, putting a fusion in between. How good do the circuits have to be, in order, the components, in order to get a GHZ state which is useful or even detectable? And now comes the hard part of the result, and it's looking very challenging. So this chart here shows that if we take a single photon source, what is the kind of success probability that the source must have versus what is the single photon mass of that source? So characterized as the second order function, the G2 at zero. And it turns out, in order to get a successful event from those scalable gates which I just showed, we would have to sit down here. We would need a single photon source which has a success probability in the range of 90%, and a G2 which is below or at the range of 0.1, and that's very challenging. And actually, and all of those simulations were run, for instance, at detection efficiencies of 90%. So it really is hard. But we have also looked at the non-scalable schemes, like doing partially polarized beam splitter as a C0, which works in post-selection, but there we're not so affected by the efficiencies because we just select those events where you have a click here and a click there, and so we are much more reluctant. We can have the success probability go right down and it will still work, even though it's not really useful in the end. But this is interesting because then we can make a summary and get together like a chart, bring together for various quantum optics experiments and quantum optics circuits, how good do our sources need to be in terms of success probability and this single photon mass. So these are the non-scalable, and over here we have these scalable gates. And for instance, this curve here would be if we create one photon with by heralding a photon from down conversion, one SPDC. And you can see, as we turn up the power of the down converter, clearly we're running away. We can improve the success probability, but also the single photon that suffers. So heralding single photons with down conversion is a good first step, but we can never reach this kind of area. But there is a solution, and that is to use down conversion in parallel, to use like a cascaded version, or have several down converters next to each other and switch them together depending on which of them fired. And so one can essentially make a network of these several switched SPDCs and for instance sit at one point, and as we increase the number 2, 4, 8 and so on, we can just keep the single photon quality and move closer towards this this desired region. And also we can look at, okay, what about other sources? So there is quantum dots and V centers and so on, and after discussing with some of the experts in this area, so what they think is, for instance, for NV centers and quantum dots alike, so the G2 is around at the moment 0.1, that's what sort of is achieved in the lab, and the success probability can be like in this area, maybe up to 50%. Or if we use atoms or ions in cavity QED to create single photons, there has been a range of demonstrations and experiments. The G2 can be, for instance, very good, but also the single photon quality, the success probability is also hard to bring up. It's mainly limited by to get the high coupling of the photons. And that's why actually looking at the scheme of switching several down conversions in parallel and making one improved heralded state is a feasible way to go, or a useful way. And it's just a very recent result in this was actually done in Vienna. We managed to demonstrate at least a 4-to-1 switching of such a single photon. So by combining essentially two entangled photon pairs, which corresponds to, since we have the two polarization, it corresponds to having four pairs. And depending where the trigger photon clicks, so we have four trigger detectors, we can run the photon through a fast router and get out a improved single photon. And we managed to show how for one, two, or four such down converters, we can improve the success probability by keeping this G2 number constant. So with this, I'd like to summarize. I hope I managed to convince you that why we want to do photonic quantum computing and quantum communication. Of course, long distance are the goal or one of the goals, and there is a lot of interesting work happening in that direction. And the other direction is, of course, doing linear optics quantum computing with photons is still is also a very interesting direction to take, and there is still a high potential for optimization, for instance, and there's still a lot to come. And finally, I'd like to point out the various teams, which also, as I said in the beginning, I was sort of delocalized. And now at IQC, we're establishing the lab, we call it the Quantum Photonics Laboratory, and already we have kind of three members already and more to come. But also in IQC, I'm directly collaborating with the group of Gregor Weiss. Gregor is actually in Innsbruck now, but the members are still present and in the lab. But also, of course, a lot of this work was done in Vienna in the group of Anton Zeilinger, but also in Brisbane with Andrew White. And finally, I would like to point out that since it's a new lab, there are certainly good opportunities, students and postdocs, so maybe you could convey that to your lab and people. Thank you very much.